Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
My name is Caleb Seegers, and I'm going to be your host for today on the 50th episode of the Mid-Atlantic Outdoorsman. We are at 1 year, and I'm going to be interviewing today your host that you normally run with, Kevin Creeley, and Mike from Pennsylvania, who's been gracious enough to bless us with his presence and his nice shooting skills this afternoon on the range. So anyway, I hope you enjoy today's episode on this 50th, and yeah.
Michael, how you doing? Kale, how y'all doing?
What's going on?
So we got Mike Rebert. He's been on the podcast like
howdy y'all
too many times. I don't know, enough times, I guess. And he's on the podcast today. He's actually visiting from Pennsylvania, so we're doing this as an in-person recording. Hopefully the audio is crisp. I don't know. We're trying to, we've done move the table three times. Kale's in a recliner. He's holding his mic. Me and Mike are like nut to butt over here on this side of the table.
Kale looks comfy as hell.
I was about to say, it's for the podcast, man. You had to do what we had to do.
Yeah. We're trying to make it work. We got two mics and three dudes, so
awfully close over here.
Yeah.
So anyway, we got Mike visiting from PA. He's here for the week. We've been doing some bass fishing and catfish jugging and not a whole lot of catching, but we've been in the boat a lot putting lines in the water, so at least there's that.
Yep.
But anyway, yeah, this is we've been at the podcast for a year now. We're two more episodes and we'll be, I guess that's 52 weeks of podcast recording, because I've technically been doing it for a year. I think there's been 2 weeks out of the full year where I've missed an episode. Otherwise, I've recorded an episode every week. And so this is technically like the 1 year podcast, the 50th episode. Super grateful for all you guys that listen, leave reviews, shoot us messages on Instagram and stuff like that. I really appreciate it, man. It's what keeps the podcast going. And so this is fun, just kind of a fun podcast today. We have zero idea of a topic that we're going to discuss. It's just me and two of my good buddies hanging out of the house here. We got Mike's air mattress tilted up against the wall, pushed out of the way. Sure. A recliner at a caddy corner here. We're just making it work. But, yeah, it's going to be – oh, I'm going to turn my phone sound off real quick. Hold up. All right. There's a fire on Kempsville Circle.
Oh, my gosh. Mr. Firefighter coming right on out right now.
I guess it's just going to have to wait.
That's right.
Yeah, not today. But, yeah, so –
I'm about to say, between the three of us, we've got almost the whole entire Mid-Atlantic covered this season, with the exception of maybe West Virginia.
Yeah,
North Carolina, Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania, New York. I guess I'm leaving out, you know, Delaware and Jersey or something like that, but close enough.
If you want to put Alabama and stuff like that in there, I guess you can. I don't know if that's necessarily Mid-Atlantic. I guess it's more like
that's at all.
That's more like Southeast.
It's about as Southeast you can get, next to the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, Gulf of America.
It's kind of like Brighton 2025, you know, after January 2nd, you know, I'm still getting used to it on the pencil.
But yeah, no, it's been a good few days here. Mike's been visiting. He come down and we were going to go bass fishing. We went the first day on the beautiful Chickahominy River. And I pretty much told him, I said, it's a tidal river. He's never fished a tidal river because they don't have cool stuff like that in PA. They just fish a bunch of lame.
No, it's fucking lame down there.
Stagnant
up
water.
There, I guess, you know?
It's trout.
Trout.
A couple of bluegill.
Trout and very hard bass fishing.
Well, he fished his first tidal river fishing trip. And I told him when we were on the way, I said, we were running late. It was like, we had to stop at a gas station. In Ocean View, Kale, you know where that's at.
Norfolk. The tightest the most ghetto, tightest 7-Eleven anybody's probably been to.
Yeah, it was rough. And anyhow, we got to running late. Between that and a little bit of traffic, we got to running late. And by the time we put in the water, it was like sun had been up for 20 minutes. Usually I like to get on the water by the time it's like sun's barely rising. And we run across the river. It's probably like a 2 mile run to my spot. And we get there, it's a mouth of a creek, goes into like a little backwater cove. And at the mouth of that creek on an outgoing tide, the bass will be just slamming top water. And I told him, I was like, we need to be there at sunrise. And he doesn't understand tidal river fishing, like when the tide changes, you know, like it's a wrap. Yeah. Like as soon as it goes slack, they just cease That's to known. Exist. They just go 20 foot under the earth. I don't know what happened. And I was talking to him about it. Like, I've been fishing tidal rivers for a little bit now. I have an understanding of that. You know, if the tide is coming out and like everything lines up, you got the proper wind, the proper tide, the proper water temperature, et cetera, like the bite is on fire. And then when the tide dies, they stop biting. And I don't know why that is, but I just understand that it happens, you know? Mm-hmm. And like when the tide goes slack, the bite will just die. So we pulled up and I mean, there was fish blowing up out of the water, just blowing up everywhere. And it was like every cast you were getting a strike on a topwater bait. We were throwing frog. I was throwing a frog, and he was throwing a spook.
And I was freaking. I was walking that spook. I got a freaking bite every single time I would cast it, and whether I got a fish or not, it was some type of blow up that would miss or whatnot. But Kevin told me that it would be a freaking great time. It would be a great time. Either way, the fish were going to be blowing up. While we were running out there, there was fishes blowing up left and right. And we got out there, and it was awesome for the first 30 minutes. and then it just went completely dead.
And sure enough, it just, like I said, we pulled up. They were blowing up left and right. I threw a frog, got like two short strikes on the first two casts. He throws a spook, gets blown up on the first cast. Second cast, he catches a fish. He put the first fish in the boat. I switched to a popper. I bought this sexy ass popper. Actually, Ocean's East the other day, dude. Just one of those ridiculous, like, $25 poppers that, like...
The Ricos?
No, it was a 6 cents. It was a 6 cents.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, those are dumb. Like, I catch plenty of fish on $7 hula poppers, you know? But this thing was so cool.
$25 looks cooler than air when it's near you, not breaks, and it goes off.
So I'll buy the sweet popper, dude. I don't even know what kind of fish it looked like. It looked like a baby
bass. Look at the baby bass. Yeah. It had, like, the gills cut out and everything, but, like, spitting water on the left sides of it.
It was sick. So anyway, I tie it on the night before, and I'm like, if the frog's not hitting, I'll throw this. And I throw it. My first cast, I throw it. And it just gets absorbed into the earth, dude.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he's got it. He's got it. And I set the hook. And it was a good fish, like 3.5 pounds. And then for the next 5 minutes, it was on fire. Like all you wanted on top water. And then the tide went slack. I spit on the water. My spit stayed in one spot. And I said, tide's slack. Bite's going to be dead now. And Mike's like, no way, dude. These fucking fish are blowing up everywhere. And then...
Well, let's bounce back here, because when I caught that first fish, we just had to net it with your net.
Yeah.
And my freaking treble hook got so tangled up in that damn net of Kevin's. So I spent the next 15, 20 minutes trying to get my treble hook out of his net and then replace the treble hook because I damaged the hell out of it. And while Kevin was up there on the front deck just casting, just pulling bass after bass into the boat, I was like, oh, shit, dude, we're good, dude. This bite's going to be all day long, all morning. We're good. He's like, dude, I'm telling you, slack tide, we're not gonna catch shit. It's gonna be dead here in like 10 minutes. I'm like, no way. Get up on the deck, start casting again. Nothing. We casted the whole freaking weed line. Nothing.
Yeah, dude, that tide slacks up. It's a wrap.
So I got a theory about it, and you know, someone smarter could probably prove me wrong or could answer this question, but I think about this a lot just because of how much we fish the chick. And your tidal rivers and like with the saltwater fishing we do and stuff like that. You got to think, man, like those fish stage there for a reason. Mm-hmm. And I think that they use it to their advantage where they know where the meal's coming from, especially on an outgoing tide. And they sit there and they gorge and they gorge and they gorge on the easiest prey coming out of those tidal creeks. There's only one way to go. And so once the tide, you know, slacks and they've gorged and, you know, eaten up all the bait fish, you know, one extra bait fish straggler that didn't make it after they got a full belly, when they can just literally stay put and conserve energy and wait for the next tide cycle to work for them instead of having to work for it. So maybe that's got something to do with it, man.
So I fully understand that. And I think my theory on it is that, you know, on an outgoing tide at the mouth of a creek, like obviously the bait fish are getting pulled out, mm-hmm. right? Because they're up in there because the water went up in the vegetation and it gives the bait fish food or whatever.
From two lanes to one.
Right. Right. Yeah. The little minnows go up in the grass and they've got food to eat on. And the bluegills go up in there to eat the minnows and the bass go up in there to eat the bluegills, right? It's a food chain.
Circle
and,
life.
And it works out because the tide is coming out, which is pulling all the bait fish out. So mm-hmm. the minnows are getting pulled out. The bluegills are following the minnows. Bass are following the bluegills. So I get it. They're staging on the mouth of that creek, and they're waiting on the tide to get pulled out. So all those bait fish get pulled out. And that makes 100% sense to me. But I mean, like, it is like a light switch.
Mm-hmm.
When that tide flips, the bite completely dies. And it's like, do the bass just leave? Because it's like,
they're like, it's time to go to North Carolina. See you guys.
Right. Because I'm still presenting the bait the exact same I had been for the last hour and a half when the current was ripping out. And then as soon as it slacks, it's like not every bass has left this creek. There's no way that every single one of them has just jetted out of this creek with the outgoing tide. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they do. But it's like, do they just see my bait presentation at a slack tide and they're like, no.
No, I feel like,
you know what I mean?
I feel like even at slack tide, we were watching fish boil. And we watched the occasional blow up here and there.
Yeah.
But, like, they just were not biting. Yeah. Like, it was just tough. You could throw anything you wanted at those fish, and they were not going to take it.
Yeah. Just frustrating.
But on the same conversation, though, the closer you get to that slack tide, especially on an outgoing, the bite gets better and better and better and better. The closer you get to that slack tide, and then as soon as it hits slack tide, it just dumps.
Dude, the last hour.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, the last 3 hours, it's good. Last 2 hours, yeah, it's getting better. The last hour, it's like, all right, time to, you know, this is where we're going to get our limit right now.
Right, and that's like what happened to me and Mike. We pulled up because we were running so late that morning. We didn't get to the mouth of the creek till probably 6:30 in the morning.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Low tide was at 8 sharp. So we had an hour and a half,
mm-hmm.
and that was it. And that was like including you know, killing the boat, putting the trolling motor in, getting set, getting baits right, blah, blah. And by the time we had baits in the water, probably an hour and some change left of the good tide. And I mean, it's just crazy how tide influenced this, that bite is on that tidal river.
Yeah, but then you go to the shell one or like an actual reservoir, and it's like you can still catch the same number of fish if you know where to go, but it's spaced out. Like you don't get on them like back to back to back on tidal, where, you know, you're just more spaced out through a reservoir throughout the day. It's a little bit tougher, but yeah.
But yeah, anyway, so that's kind of what we've been up to. We went bass fishing. First day, Mike was here. Second day, that's today, right? Second day you were here? Today?
All right. Today's the second day? Today's the third day, buddy.
All right. What are we doing on the second day?
Second day. That was yesterday. We went fishing on Chicken Island.
Oh, the first day we went to my parents' house.
Yes. The first day we went
to my parents' house. We fished the lake.
And I outfished Kevin. It was great. It was a great time. And then he outfished me on the Chicken Island the next day, and I felt like shit.
I hope you would, at least on the first day. That would be a terrible host.
First day I outfished, destroying them on a finesse rig. Texas finesse rig, just destroying them behind Kevin's parents.
Dude, he three casts in a row caught a fish. That was pretty cool.
That's awesome, man. Yeah.
Three casts in a row. We did not catch one big fish.
We also went there at the perfect day, on the perfect day to fish. Like overcasty, slight mist. It was just the perfect day to catch a fish.
But I'm going to tell you, you can ask Caleb, you can go there on 105 degrees, 2 o'clock in the afternoon and catch a dozen fish.
Side note, Kevin was pissed. He was running the tilling trolling motor on the back of that John boat.
Yeah.
And he was just so pissed off at the wind. I mean, that wind was just brutal.
No mercy.
Oh, yeah.
We've had like 10 days of straight east northeast winds, and it's been great for the temperature, but terrible for fishing. Like any guy that's at least got to operate a trolling motor for any length of time.
Dude, we were on the Chick the other day, and I was running. I'm trying to get into this creek. We're at, you know where Yarmouth Creek is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm trying to get into Yarmouth Creek.
Yep.
There's that duck blind right at the front, and I want to pitch that duck blind. And there's that like stack of wood outside of the creek. And we're throwing to that stack of wood. I was like, we'll drop shot the stack of wood, and then we'll troll up into the creek, and we'll pitch that duck blind. From the stack of wood to the duck blind is probably 60 yards.
Mm-hmm.
It took us every bit of 20 minutes to get from that stack of wood to that duck
just
blind.
Just because of how strong the wind was going.
The wind was coming out of the north,
and
the current was ripping out of the north. So it was just simultaneous. We're just getting slammed. And I had the trolling motor on continuous on speed 5 cranked, dude. Pointed straight at that duck blind. It took us 20 minutes to get 60 yards.
For the listeners that don't know, Chickahominy holds the most duck blinds I've ever seen in my entire life. They are fire. All right. The fish are just stacked under those duck blinds. Don't want to give all away Kevin's spots, but.
Well, that's the cool part about it, man. If you, one of those blinds are yours, then you probably have an epic winter because you get to shoot ducks. Shoot a deer. And catch a massive ton of crappie.
We literally talked about that.
That's what we were talking about. I said, if I duck hunt, that's what I said. I said, dude, if I duck hunted out here, I'd bring a bait caster in my duck blind.
Dude, I'd bring a golf bag so I could have like a shotgun, spinning reel, a bait caster, cast net, like just everything.
We were literally talking about this.
Well, the ducks ain't flying. I'll just pitch a chatterbait.
There was a one duck blind right up against like this most beautiful freaking trail that was running right along the river. And I was like, dude, you could literally sit in that duck blind with a bow, and cast out, catch catfish, catch bass, and wait in the rut, during the rut, for a buck to walk by and shoot it out of the duck blind. It'd be the best day of your life.
Can you imagine how,
shoot a bass, catch a catfish, dude?
You're blowing up or whatever, the ducks fly by, you accidentally cast a chatterbait at the duck, or whatever. Dang it.
Wrong weapon.
Oh, he took it.
Dude, that's the beauty, though. That's
what's cool about the Mid-Atlantic region.
That's what I was just going to say, man.
First time ever here in Virginia. First time on the Chickahominy. It was the most beautiful place I've ever been. I've always dreamed about coming down here and fishing tidal rivers and such. And, it was everything that I've ever dreamed of, to be honest with you. We didn't catch a lot of fish, but I told Kevin the whole time. I was like, dude, I don't care if we don't catch a single fish. This is the most beautiful place I've ever been. And so, Virginia.
It's
quite the place to be.
Dude, come back down in the spring, you know, like when the, you know, not the dog days of summer, when they're a little bit more cooperative too. Yeah. It'd be awesome.
I told you need to come back in the wintertime and go crappie fishing with old Kale.
Yeah. Come December, February, and March.
He's quite the crappie slayer, right?
Yeah. And pan fishing, dude, I'm still coming off the high, you know, from the wind last
year. Yeah.
At the Brimbuster Classic.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. Yeah. The Brimbuster Classic. That's something that we don't do up north. Go ahead, Kale.
Yeah, down here, I guess you could say south of the Mason-Dixon line. We have brim in, you know, all other 50 breeds of panfish, but the shellcracker are the biggest of the ones down here, and they fight incredible on light tackle, and they taste incredible. And at our hunt club in North Carolina, we hunt right on the Chowan River. And one of my buddies, or my buddy that I share the camper with, Garrison, down there, he's really big into the tournament scene and the bass fishing. And we fish together throughout the year outside of hunting season. But he brought it up, and he's like, dude, you know, all these high-stakes tournaments, these bass tournaments, we all have a fun, just, you know, gag tournament with the bluegill. And I was like, dude, that's brilliant. Like, that's awesome. That'll be a good time. There's no pressure. I mean, you know, of course, everyone, like, wants to win, but it's like, it's just for the fun of it. But we had six teams last weekend show up, and it took 3 pounds, 11 ounces for your 5 biggest brim. So it was a good time. Had six teams, and next year we'll hopefully have more.
Who got the 3 pounds?
Yeah, who won?
Gale?
Your boy.
Boy.
Hey, everyone's a winner when you get to eat them, you know, when, you know, you're frying and stuff like that. But it's a good time, man. There's no seriousness to it whatsoever, but it was also one of those.
There was so much seriousness to it.
No, dude, yeah, I'm totally playing it up, dude. I was like coaching Danielle, getting all.
You were locked in, dude.
Yeah. we're not bombing any cast of that. I need your cast on target.
Dude, me and my wife were like getting in arguments on the boat.
Over bluegill. That's what's crazy about it, dude.
On bluegill, she's like casting a box. I snagged again. I'm like, you've got to get your head in the gate.
Yeah. Break it off.
There's a lot on the line right now. Yeah. I'm on a hot bite over here. I can't afford to go back that way. The wind's blowing out of the north.
Just open the bell and stay hung up. I'm going to keep fishing, okay?
Yeah. I just got bit. I can't move.
Yeah. Like, I'm on it right now. I'm locked in.
Dude, it was fun, man. We were having so much fun. It was a good time. But what's crazy is I actually was taking this serious because Kale takes this panfish tournament serious. And I was like, I'm taking this trophy from Kale.
I don't have to beat anyone except Kale.
So here's the thing. Kale's the panfish guy, right? Like, he literally owns a bass tracker and a fiberglass center console, and he bought the bass tracker for panfishing. Like, he bought, what boat do you have?
It's a Bass Tracker 185. It's got the recirculated live well and all that stuff for your tournament bass fishing.
Yeah.
So, like, the timer on the live well. And I think I've put Cheetos and trash in that live well, and everything else just goes in the cooler.
He's got like the fucking the bass fishing boat from back in the day, you know what I mean? And he bought this thing for crappie fishing. Like, Kale's the crappie fishing guy, and so like he panfishes all the time, and that's his thing, like drop shotting in deep water and like finding big panfish. So I knew like it's gonna be tough to beat Kale. He's fished this tournament 3 years in a row. He knows this river. He's literally fished this river his whole life. But I wanted to beat him so bad. I was like, I gotta take that trophy. Okay, I got to.
Yeah, all $20 are off of Amazon.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know.
It's a cool trophy. It's a cool trophy. It's got a bluegill on it.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm like, I got to take this trophy from Kale, dude. I got to. So, like, Danielle and I, my wife, we took it seriously. And I was like, hey, let's go down there 2 days before. We're going to pre-fish this thing.
Well, it got in my head, dude, when you said that we're going Thursday, because you saw where I ended up winning the tournament.
Yeah.
It was right next to the dock.
Yeah.
That's where all the winning fish, I was like, I got to get this head. I'm like, yeah, man, normally I run like 2 miles south, you know, gonna make a long run, you know, chase these panfish. That's why I'm like,
dude, these panfish. Well, dude, they're not under every freaking log in the entire river.
Yeah, I burned 12 gallons last year, dude. But everyone started heading south. I'm like, all right, cool. And we fished around everyone. And like,
you were happy to get the last draw.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Everyone took off, and I'm like, all right, oh, man. And I turned the boat right back around afterwards and went, like, trolled right back to the boat.
So We pre-fished this thing. We showed up, you know, obviously I'm going to bass fish first. I'm a bass fisherman, obviously. And so we went out there and, like, you know, first, I got there first light. We went and we bass fished a lily pad stretch. And I hooked a couple on a frog and lost them. And then my wife hooked one. And we started brim fishing. Once the sun come up, we started brim fishing. I said, all right, let's pre-fish for this tournament. And I went to that same spot, that spot where you had caught at least one of your winning fish.
Yes.
Right there at the Three Rivers.
Yep.
Where that big duck blind is.
Yep.
And I fished right there, and I was throwing a drop shot, like, probably 10 foot off the lily pad, and I caught two nice ones.
Yeah.
I caught two that were, like, just under a pound.
Yeah, they were. That's what I'm saying. They got in my head. You see the picture, I'm like, oh, man, dude, that's a winning sack right there.
And I was like, but I wasn't catching a lot of fish on the drop shot. You know, obviously you throw a bobber up in the cypress knees and stuff, and you're just getting slammed left and right.
Worms.
Yeah, you know, you catch a lot of fish, but a lot of them are, you know, the size of your palm, tiny fish, you know. But you're weeding through them, and every once in a while you get a half pounder, and it gives you hope.
Yep.
You're like, oh, there might be a big one in there. But when I would throw the drop shot, I would get some bigger fish, but it
anyway, tournament day, I was throwing bobbers. And I should have been off the grass line throwing a freaking drop shot. I know this sounds stupid to a lot of the listeners. They're like, y'all are taking this way too serious. Mm-hmm. But
that's what makes it fun.
That's why it's fun. Yeah. Yeah. I can see that being a blast.
Dude, yeah. Come on, man.
And then when me and Danielle come by Kale when he was at that duck blind, and I saw him that he was like 12 foot off the bank, and he was twitching that rod tip. And I said, that motherfucker's throwing a drop shot. He's got a drop shot on the bottom. And Danielle made the mistake of holding up that fish. That fish was like a pound and some change. And I'm like, they're fishing drop shots off in the deep. I was like, really, that shit up. Cut that bobber off. Put a drop. we're tying on drop shots. I'm like, we got to fish deep. And I pulled one off, dude. Had to be a pound and a half. I'm not blowing smoke. I pulled one off. Had to be a pound and a half. Like, he's peeling drag on my little ultralight. And I'm on a drop shot, you know. And I'm like, I'm telling you, the big fish are deep.
Must have been a 10-pound largemouth at that point, man. But, dude, so the night before, that's what I'm saying. Like, it was more of a head game, man, because he sent me pictures of the ones he was catching. I'm like, well, dang. And I even started, like, analyzing the cypress trees in the back. I'm like, do I know this cypress tree? It looks like all the other thousands of ones out there. I was like, nah, man, he's not in my spot. But the night before, you sent me a picture of your rods rigged up, and I saw bobbers. And I looked at Danielle, I was like, I got this. He's not deep enough. Bobbers. He's got the bobbers. But no, that's a good time. We'll do it again next year, next summer, man.
I'm coming for you next year, dog.
Dude, I hope so, man. I hope so.
Dude, Mike, you got to line it up next year and make it in time. Right, bring your little boat.
I got to.
Dude. Yes. And
bring my little boat. Yeah. What are you talking shit about, boat?
Bring your little boat, your little deer mouse.
Yeah. That's fucked up, right? I've seen your trophy wall, bro.
Next year we're gonna try to do it. We had a babysitter watch our 3-year-old this year, so we were on like a tight timeline. But next year, like everyone seemed to have a good time. So next year we want to invite a few more people and actually host it back at the Hunt Club, so we can skin the fish, clean them up, have some hot dogs, hamburgers, a couple of beers, you know, and like get it more of a wholesome environment instead of like, all right, you know, thanks for coming out and all right, now go home. Like, I want to make it more family friendly and like,
yeah, dude, we ought to next year, like have something, you know, either have a crock pot meal or like ribs on a smoke or something like that.
Yes, you know, just make it
big
fun,
meal afterwards around. And. Yeah, that'd be sick.
Raffle off of some bobbers or something.
Dude, his bobbers
or something.
Raffle off some
giants. Some gold Aberdeen.
Oh, we got some Eagle Claw Aberdeen. Number two.
We got these bobbers out here. You ain't going to catch shit on those things.
We got the green night crawlers, you know. Yeah. Raffle
is off. But yeah, no. His hunt club, dude. Mike, his hunt club is, it's like right on the Chowan River. But it's one of the largest tracts of public land in North Carolina. It's a cool spot.
North Carolina.
Yep.
Oh, cool.
Yep.
And it's just a cool spot to hang out. Like, what's cool about it is, like, my hunt club's cool. Like, we've got, like, I don't know. How big would you say the club property is? Without the woods, you know.
Just the camper track?
Yeah, like 5 acres.
5-8 acres, something like that.
Yeah, somewhere in there. It's a cool spot. It's graveled, and we got our campers. We got a little cabin, you know, cool spot to hang out and all that good stuff. But at Kale's Hunt Club, dude, they got like a manicured lawn. It's like
an HOA. It might as well be an HOA.
It's probably 15 acres, dude. It's a big chunk right there.
Well, it's like a race car track.
It might be 20 acres.
On the inside, and then the campers on the outside and all that stuff.
And everything's like, it's lined up, dude. It's proper. It looks like a upper echelon white people neighborhood. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's proper. And they got the campers lined up. They got the nice, dude, the cabin is so sweet. That thing's 200 years old.
1920 is when it was built.
Okay, all right, 100 years old.
But it's still all original log cabin that they literally sawed the trees down from around the property.
That's awesome.
And built the cabin.
It's sweet.
The heritage and the history is what makes that place, man.
I got a quick question about the heritage. It's like a hunt club thing. It's a thing of the South.
Yes, 100%. Up north, you have leases and stuff
right,
like that.
Absolutely.
Down here,
yeah,
it's the hunt club or public land, or if you're lucky enough, you know, you own the land, but. Down here, if you want to, like, if you're like a nobody without a lot of money, or just an average dude like we are, you try to get into a hunt club and shop around for your hunt clubs and stuff like that.
Yeah. But you got, now once you get into a hunt club, dude, like once you're a part of a hunt club and you've done that for a couple of years, like you have to have a hunt club. Like you just, once you've done it, you got the camper, you got the 4-wheeler,
the shower back at the camper,
you got a spot, you get to know the people, it becomes part of hunting season. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like. Every hunting season, I look forward to hanging out with my hunt club people. You know what I mean?
Right.
And, like, you come back to camp, all your boys are there, you talk about what you saw, you talk about whatever, you cook some food, it's a big group thing. Like, it just becomes part of the culture,
well,
you know?
You know,
like, If I lost, and I am losing my hunt club. My hunt club is getting turned into solar in 3 years.
I'm sorry, buddy.
It's terrible.
Dude, this happened across the South, dude.
That's terrible.
A lot of states down here.
Yeah. And with that, like, I'm already looking for another hunt club. Like, I'm not going to just, I got plenty of public lands and stuff that I hunt. Like, I'm coming home with you in Maryland. I got a lease up in New York. I can go, I call it a lease.
That's what it feels like.
It's a permission ground family, but. I've got, you know,
nowhere close to at least, bro. I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah.
No, it sounds cool though.
Yeah, it does sound good.
Plenty of places to go hunt, you know. Yes. Plenty of there's good public land in Virginia. You know, there's, you know, I'm not gonna call it a name. I almost did, but anyway, there's a piece of public land that I hunt in Virginia.
Yep.
And you know, we do the Seek a Deer hunting stuff in October, and there's plenty of hunting, but
you missed the lottery, man.
I gotta have a hunt club, dude. Gotta have a hunt club.
It's your home base.
Well, yeah, I don't think hunt clubs are a big thing up north. And if they are, I know that most of you guys are Pennsylvania listeners. Hit up your boy, all right? Pennsylvania boy. I want to be a part of a hunt club. I don't think they have that up north. But if they do, let me know. It'd be something that I'm very
It's true. I pulled the demographics recently, and most of my listeners are from Pennsylvania.
Howdy, y'all.
It's pretty wild.
That's my people.
That's my people.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. So, I don't know how that happened. But welcome.
But thank
welcome
you.
To the show.
I told you what it is. Okay, Pennsylvania has the most hunters per square mile in any state in any other state in the entire country.
It does.
It does.
I've heard that.
14 hunters per square mile on average. That is a ton. Y'all are doing great up there in Pennsylvania.
Everybody but Mike.
Everybody but me. Apparently, according to this podcast, I only mount small deer, and they all go on my wall. Every single one of them.
Dude, there's been this ongoing joke.
There's
been this ongoing joke because I guess on one of my podcasts, I mentioned that Mike has a sweet ass man room. He's got a ton. How many deer mouse do you have? How many shoulder mouse do you have?
It's not a lot. It's like seven.
Well, yeah. It looks like a lot in the photo.
It looks great.
Most folks have like two or three.
I wouldn't say big deer. Every deer hunter should have at least seven good mounts on one wall. Okay, not spread out throughout the entire house. It all needs to be on one wall. It just looks great. You can stand in front of that wall and be like, "Yeah, this is my freaking trophy."
Right and here. He had mentioned one time. He said, "Dude, I just love mounting deer.
That's true.
You get to tell the story. Like, you kill the deer, you get to tell the story. You see the mount, blah blah, whatever. So I just mount every deer. I don't care how big it is." That's what he said. And so I mentioned on another podcast, I said, Mike mounts like all his deer. My buddy Mike mounts like all his deer. He's got a room full of shoulder mounts, and it's freaking sweet. I was like, he doesn't care if it's like, you know, not the biggest buck. He mounts all his deer. He's got a bunch of deer mounts. And don't get me wrong, some of them are awesome. Some of them are giants. But some of them are not giants. I'm not saying they're small, tiny little bucks.
Right. Yeah, no, they definitely are. I have like some.
But I made the comment, and so him and my wife have been giving me a hard time all week.
We're just messing with you, man.
All freaking week, talking about how I said Mike mounts small deer. That's not what I said.
No. I just like the look of deer mounts. I figure in the future, I'm going to look back and be like, hey, I regret mounting that. No, it's not going to happen.
It's never going to happen.
I'm going to look at it and be like, that is a great deer. I remember every part of that story. I'm going to look at it and just immediately remember what happened that day. And that's all I can ask for. So
yeah, that's the truth though. I don't think anyone's ever like if I hear someone say, "Man, I shouldn't have mounted that deer," like I don't know how to respond to that next answer. Like it was like, I don't know how to respond. Like, what do you say to that?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I've never done that. I don't regret any of the deer that I've shot.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I just told a story the other day. Mike was out here in the bar room.
And I listened to every story Kevin's got.
We were looking at the deer on the wall, and I was telling the story about the one that I shot. Cut over where you busted your eye open.
I was laughing. You got to tell the story right now because I know for a fact every episode.
I went blind for a week in the rut, like our rut for Kevin. And meanwhile, like Kevin's like, anyway, cool story, bro. You see my deer?
No. All right, hold on. Back up. I'll tell the story.
All right.
So it's a rut. I'm hunting a clear cut. I'm on the edge of like some bedding cover. And his buck comes out at first light. He's cruising the edge of this bedding cover. It's a pretty good buck. It's like 7-pointer. It's probably like 16, 17 inches wide. And he come out. He's like 100 yards. I'm shooting with a black powder rifle. I'm comfortable to like 90, 100. Excuse me. And he's walking up the edge of this bedding cover away from me. Like straight away from me. And I grunt at him. He looks back. Stops. He looks back. No interest. Keeps walking. I grunt a little bit louder. stops, looks back, no interest, he keeps walking. So I snort wheeze at him. He turns, does a 180, and I mean trots in to like 65 yards and stops dead behind a short pine tree. And he's standing behind that pine tree. I got the gun rested. I'm waiting for him to take a step. He takes a step. I yell at him. Rah! He stops behind, you know, or in the next shooting lane. He stops. Put it behind his shoulder, squeeze the trigger. If you've ever shot a black powder rifle, it's a huge cloud of smoke. You can't see anything for like 2 seconds. And I like, you know, you always do the, I don't know if you do. You always do the, where you lean around.
Try to lean around the smoke.
Lean around. Yeah, I know you do that. You do it?
It's yeah. One of the superstition things. Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. It doesn't make a difference, but we still
you can't
do it.
See it all. The cloud's so big, you can't see. But I do it every time. You shoot me, you know, you look. I try to look around the cloud to see if I got him. And I don't see the deer. I'm like, where's this daggum deer? And I started looking. And he's walking. He's like 30 yards past where I shot him. He's just slow walking up the edge of that cover towards the loading deck. And I just see him walking. And there's a hill up there. So he gets to the top of the hill and then he disappears. But if you go up that hill from where I'm sitting and then go down, you will disappear in my view. Yep. You know, because you go down the other side of the hill. And I'm probably 30 foot up this sweet gum tree that I climbed back there. And he disappears on the other side of that hill. I can't see the deer anymore. So I don't know if I just straight up missed. Like, I'm so confused.
Yeah.
So I call Kale. He's probably hunting 500-600 yards from me on the other side.
Literally the same clear cut on the opposite side.
No, I call him. He actually, as soon as he answered the phone, he said, "What'd you do?" Because he obviously heard me shoot.
Heard you.
Yeah. And I'm like, I shot one. I think it's a pretty good one. I don't know if I got him. Like, I just watched him walk away, I think is what I said.
He casually left, yeah.
And you're like, asking me questions. And I'm like, dude, I don't know. He just walked away. It's weird. I just watched him walk off slow, and he disappeared once he got to the top of the hill. And Kale's like, all right, give me like 30 minutes, I'll get down.
I don't even think I made it 30 because I was having a terrible morning. I was like, I think it like 30 turned into 10. I'm like, all right, I'm down. Let's go find this thing.
Yeah, you ain't seen a deer, right?
No, yeah. No. It had been a long morning. And afternoon because I hunted the same tree that afternoon.
Yep. And so Kale calls me. He says, hey, I'm on the way. I'm coming up the two track. Be there in a second. He's like, all right. I see Kale peer into view about 150 yards away on the edge of this clear cut. I said, hey, I see you. I'm on the phone with him. I said, hey, I see you. Come to me. They come towards me, and I wave at him with my orange hat. Come towards me, and I'll have you stand where the deer was. Because if you've ever hunted a thick, like, broom straw, short pine, clear cut, once you get down out of the tree, it is so hard to find where your deer was standing because there's just so much cover. It's hard to go figure out where exactly your deer was standing.
Yep.
So I figure I'll just stay up in the stand, and I'll just have Kale get to the spot and then check for blood. So Kale walks to, like, exactly where the deer was standing. I said, you see blood right there? He said, no. I said, dadgummit. All right. Turn around 180 and walk back this way. This is the way the deer went. So Kale starts walking.
This deer did not take the path of least resistance, by the way.
So I said, you see blood yet? He said, no. I'm like, dadgummit, dude. There's no way I missed this deer. Dude, I put it right behind his shoulder. 65 yards with a gun that's sighted in at a buck 20.
Yeah.
And Kale's walking up the hill. He's walking up the hill. And then Kale just, I just watch him bend over 90 degrees. He just bends over, hands on his knees, puts his gun on the ground. And I'm like, I'm on the phone. I'm like, Caleb, what are you doing? Caleb, pick up the phone, dude. And he's just not answering. And I'm like, and he pulls the phone to his ear to a second. Hold on. I'm like, what is he having a heart attack? What is he? Yeah. What is he doing, dude?
Yeah, man, you're being selfish. Go find my deer.
Yeah. And he goes, my eye. That's all he says. And then the phone goes back down. And I'm like, dude, what are you doing? And he's like, to a greenbrier vine, straight to the eye.
That's like stepping on a rake, dude. Because it's so thick there. That's what I'm saying. Like, the deer took
it's
a
ring.
Dude, I moved something out of the way, and it literally, like a bungee cord, came back and smacked me, not in the face, not in the hat, like directly in the eyeball, dude, and knocked the wind out of me. And anyway, yeah, I'll continue.
So he picks his head up, he turns around and looks at me from like 80 yards away, and he's like, does it look bad? And his eye, I think it was your left eye, wasn't it?
It was my left eye, dude.
Because it wasn't your shooting eye.
It wasn't my shooting eye. Yeah. No.
He holds up his eye, and this thing is purple as a is an eggplant. It looks so bad. It's like the size of a golf ball. He's like, is it bad? I'm like, no, motherfucker, look for my deer.
It's like he moves like, why are we still talking about your RIP? Go find my deer, dude. Yeah, be a man about it. But dude, what was crazy about that is like, a lot of time, like I pick up my gun and I'm still like holding my eye. I'm literally just trying to get my bearings around and I look over and there's a deer. Like he was like 5-10 yards from me and I was like, all right, Kevin, I found your deer. He's like, all right, sweet, I'm getting out. Like,
he said, there he is. I'm like, all right, sweet, I'm getting down. Wait for me. And then Kel goes back into the tripod position. Holding his eyeball, dude.
Dude, it was terrible. Like, the worst time to catch one to the eye, man, like, during the rut. Because, you know, during our rut season, we're hunting muzzleloaders down here. I don't care what you're shooting, dude. If you're shooting high, you're screwed. Whether it's a bow or a rifle or a scope. But
it's so funny.
Yeah. But, like, the whole ride home, it's a two-hour ride home back from the hunt club that day because that was my last day. And, like, the whole way down 58 at, like, 9 o'clock at night with nothing but, you know, 18-wheelers with their high beams on. And I'm literally, like, Ray Charles driving down the highway.
At least that can be your story. You know? Like, oh, well, you know, a giant could have walked from it, couldn't see it.
Yeah, dude,
I had one eye.
I had an excuse. But Danielle, my wife, dude, was like, oh, my gosh, we need to get you to the, like, we need to go see a doctor. I'm like, ah. And she goes, what? I'm like, I'm leaving for 6 more days. I'm gonna hunt. She goes, no, you're not right now. I was like, baby, I can't miss you. What good is it gonna do if you can't see, Kale? Like,
all right, I got two eyes, woman.
Yeah. Dude, I took. I was like, all right. So we went to the doctor the next day, and they did that like test where they put the liquid in your eye and they shine a light to it, and then it literally, my whole pupil looked like shattered glass. It had scratched everything in there, and it took probably a whole month to get my vision back out of it. But the next day, like after it got cleared, I did end up shooting a buck that was less than stellar because I could only see out of one eye, dude. But,
he calls me. So bad. He calls me, dude. He's sitting on his clear cut at his hunt club. He sent me a Snapchat and he was like, "Sitting on his clear cut, I haven't sat it yet. It's a young clear cut, blah, blah, whatever." And he sends me a Snapchat of it. And then, like, an hour later, he sends me a picture, like a video, and I can see, like, the smoke from the black powder still clearing, you know? And he's like, got him. And I'm like, hell yeah, I'm like waiting for the phone call. Like, you got a giant, you know? And then here comes the phone call from Caleb. I answer it. I'm like, you get him? He's like, yeah, I got him. And he walks up on his deer. And then this thing was like, this wide.
It was probably 8 inches wide on the outside.
Couldn't see a damn thing, but I got him.
Yeah, I got him. Yeah.
Dude, when I walked up on my buck that afternoon that I shot the one from the original story, I'm walking up on it. I'm pumped. I see the deer. I see his, like, four sides sticking up on one side. I'm like, hell yeah, Kale. Hell, that's what I'm talking about.
Yep.
And I go up to hug Kale. And he's got one eye closed. It's all purple. He's hugging me with one eye. He's like, yeah, dude. You know
what I'm saying? But that's what made the story. You look back on that deer and think of that, literally, the story we just told now. And to add to the cherry on top, eating homemade venison and rice burritos on the way out, dude.
Dude, we were dragging this deer. I had packed. I had
deer fell 5 yards from the trail. It was the most incredible.
I mean, you drive the truck to the deer.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like the shortest.
You couldn't be mad at it.
It's like a deer tried to make it to the trail and then expired.
The night before, I had taken tortillas, soft 10-inch tortillas, taco tortillas, right?
Talk to me.
And I took some Tostitos, the queso, you know, the queso, the yellow queso that comes from the jar.
Right up my alley.
I spread that on the tortilla, put a little ground venison on there,
yes, sir.
Beef and sausage.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Locked up in a little
bit of onions and peppers. Wrapped it up, put it in aluminum foil, and I stuck it in my fanny pack.
Gosh, give me that fanny pack.
And we're dragging this deer out. We got a little bit of a ways to go, and I was like, you want a deer taco? And he's like, are you fucking kidding me?
Is that an option right now? Okay.
Of course I do. Yeah. So I pulled two of them out of my fanny pack, like, cha-ching.
Dude, that was an epic story, man. You will kill bigger deer in years to come, dude, but you will always remember it for the story of your friend going blind, looking for your deer, and eating burritos on the way out, dude.
It's a great day.
What a great November, dude.
It's a great day. What a great day.
That's what hunting stories are made of, man.
Oh, man. We got, me and you, Mike, we got less than 4 weeks And we'll be hunting
less than
deer.
4 weeks. I would say almost 3 weeks right here, right?
3 weeks and some change.
3 weeks and a little bit of change.
And we'll be hunting deer.
And we'll be hunting deer.
Hunting white-tailed deer with
on the opening day in Maryland. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll be hunting opening day. You'll be coming down shortly after.
The day after.
The day after.
I'll be there.
Yes, sir.
And we're going to hunt some deer.
Yes, we are. And Kevin's got such a good personality to him. This guy right here is going to be a sweet talker. He's going to find so much good permission for us.
Oh, yeah. He's going to wear his firefighting uniform.
He's going to pull his hat off, put it down, and be like, hey, ma'am, how you doing? I'm here from Virginia. I'm just looking for a little permission to be down here visiting a friend.
You're
going to give me some freaking great permission, so I'm excited for that. But
yep.
I'm looking forward to it. I will get permission. I'm good at getting permission. I've gotten permission on some spots, dude. This is the trick. For the listeners, listen, this is the trick. Number one, wear a hat, right? Wear a hat. Here's why.
And be bald.
It helps if you're bald. They feel bad for you if you're bald.
He needs a deer.
This guy's bald. His life sucks, dude. You can't get women. No, but seriously, listen. You wear a hat. This is why. You can't take a hat off if you ain't wearing a hat. When you are standing on somebody's front door and they come to the door, it's a little old lady, and you take your hat off and wear it, like hold it at your hip side, right? That is the most respectful looking thing you can do.
Ma'am?
You take your hat off. Hey, good afternoon, ma'am.
Yeah.
You know, you take your hat off, dude, they love it. They
eat it in the garden as you're walking up.
That's right. Yeah, those freaking hibiscuses are gorgeous. I ain't never seen a butterfly breed a hibiscus. So gorgeous.
He's going to bring that southern hospitality
of
the
mirror.
It's beautiful. I'm telling you. But seriously, on a real note, if you just be respectful to people, you know, don't walk up. You know, you're going to be wearing camo because you're hunting, right? Like, it is what it is. But if you can be wearing normal clothes, it's better. And you take your hat off. You got to take that. Dude, if you're wearing a hat and you can take the hat off, it just helps.
Yep.
It just helps on getting permission ground. You take the hat off and then you ask the person. Boom, you're in there. They're like, yeah, he's respectful. He's not going to do nothing dirty. Like, he's a good guy, you know, right off the rip. Like, you're a good guy, you know? I don't know. It works.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sweet talking a little bit. Have a little small talk, you know? Talk about get their laughing. Death. Crack a little jokesy, you know?
Boom, you're in there shooting 130s, 140s. All day.
Yep. Or you can get hit with a, well, my grandson wants this. Well, when's the last time your grandson cut the grass?
What's your grandson? That is. It's like, come in about 2 inches.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like this hibiscus just could use some work.
That edge looks like it needs to come in about 2 inches. There ain't much of a trench there.
That's what I'm saying. You got to have these rehearsed, dude. Look at yourself in the mirror at night and practice lines over and over again. You'll get it, man.
But anyway, there's some fire permission ground up there from what you sent me in the video,
absolutely.
Dude. We're going to get awesome, dude. We're going to have a good time, dude. Let me ask you. While we're on here, let's talk a little bit of tactics. We ain't talk no tactics on this podcast. It's been straight BS. Talk a little bit of tactics.
Okay.
What is early season up there in Maryland? Yeah, let's talk Maryland. What does early season in Maryland look like? Like, as far as what are you targeting? Because obviously we're not targeting acorns that time of year. It's still a little early.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if you're hunting your private stuff, I know it's a little different. Let's talk public land.
Okay.
Public land, early season, Maryland, it's still super green, temperatures in the 80s. What are we looking for to kill a deer in the afternoon?
Private property lines.
Private property lines.
On public.
Okay, elaborate.
Within 30 to 50 yards inside of a private property line on a big horse farm or some private rich development, I'm going to be 50 yards inside the woods, hunting, hanging a stand, looking for sign, obviously. Good trails coming in, coming down the bedding, waiting for them to go out in that beautiful green Kentucky grass.
So is this a open...
Kentucky bluegrass. Get some food in the middle of the night. I'm going to be sitting right there.
Well, why? Let me ask you, why? Like, what is it like, about the private property
edges? That's just my jam, man. I just love the property edges. And people are probably listening to this like, well, what a shithead, you know? Like, well, I own a nice piece of place up the public. I hate when people come up hunt 20 yards inside of the public land.
Well, that's the name.
That is the name of the game. I'm sorry.
Hold on, back up. Why? Like, what is it about the private edge?
I don't know. I feel like because the deer, it's just a good funnel. It's a good transition. It's a good funnel. They know that they're safe there. They're going to come out to eat. They're safe out there. They know that they're safe out there. They're going to come out of the bedding. They're going to go sit in that pub.
So what you're saying is basically it's typically on that property line. It's a transition of habitat.
Right.
Right.
Well, so like it's development. It's probably going to be
extremely. It's extremely different. They're going to go out there and they're going to eat out of these people's backyards.
So
it sounds ridiculous in the podcast. I know it sounds ridiculous.
Is there anything particular that you're looking for? Like, okay, let's say the private edge is a factory. It's concrete, right?
Like for example. That's not
the type of like the quarry, for example, like on the little piece we're looking at, right?
Okay, we're not going to talk about that. No, I'm just kidding. It's not concrete. It's not concrete. There's little patches of woods within that quarry.
So what I'm asking is, are you looking for like an opening with green food source on the private side, and that's why you're hunting?
I'm not looking for food until late September.
Okay, so
I'll be honest.
We're talking early September.
I mean, I'm just looking for travel corridors outside of bedding. Like straight up obvious, because everything is so green, everything's so thick, you can see trails, so they're so obvious in the early season. As compared to when everything's off the trees, it's kind of, you can still see trails, but everything's so green, everything's still wet from all the rain that we've had, and you just get these trails that are just pounded down where you got deer prints coming in and out of thick bedding, and just like, dude, this is so obvious. You can sit up here 20 yards off that trail, put a trail camera on it, shit, watch it for 10-15 days. If there's a deer on it, that's where the deer are going to be. If we're talking about big buck hunting, that's a completely different tactic. But I'm saying, as far as killing deer, putting meat in the freezer, you want to be on that private line. There's deer coming out of thick bedding, going into private ground. Boom. I mean, 10-20 yards off that trail, they're going to walk straight underneath. Sometimes you can spin on them. Yeah. You know, you set up right on that trail.
So in a nutshell, you're looking for less pressure deer.
Absolutely. They're going
number two. Habitat diversity. Less pressure deer, habitat diversity.
Yes.
So because if you're on the private edge, like let's say the public is a bunch of hardwoods, right? A bunch of white oak trees, maybe some red oaks, whatever, some sweet gums. And on the private edge might be like some Kentucky grass.
Kentucky bluegrass, boy. And if there's deer love that shit, they'll walk straight up in there at night, eat straight out of their grass.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, so if you would, if there's a listener listening, right?
And greenbrier is great too up there in Maryland. Early season greenbrier, Maryland. And now you can get on some ag.
Mm-hmm.
The ag fields are kind of hard to get on. You know, it just depends. We're talking public here, so this is surrounded by you know, water. This is the public that me and Kevin are specifically talking about is a reservoir. It is water surrounded by hardwoods, surrounded by woods. So it's very limited access. You can access it from a boat, but obviously the freshwater reservoirs of Maryland. Some people might not know this. It's hard to get. You actually have to have a specific boat for that reservoir. Like it has to be licensed for that reservoir because they don't want certain species of bacteria and stuff.
Okay,
So it's very hard. Like I have a boat, right? But I cannot take it into that reservoir because I use it in other bodies of water. And they don't want, I think they're called zebra mussels.
Yes, and we have those signs down here on our reservoirs.
Okay, too. So we are not allowed to take another boat from a different area that we use. And I only have one boat. I don't have five boats, you know, for different reservoirs. So I have one boat that I use for bass fishing. I'm not going to take that boat and get it specifically designed. Not only that, but it's an electric motor only.
Oh, wow.
And it's a giant reservoir. So it's very hard to navigate the entire reservoir on a freaking electric motor.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. So it's
couple like, twin trolling motors on the back.
And kayaks are the same thing.
Yeah.
Kayaks are the same thing. You cannot have a kayak in there that is not
registered for that lake.
Just for that lake.
Wow.
Yes. So, you know, it's a lot of private access. Maybe knocking on doors, getting people to answer, or just finding a place to get in and then walking a shit ton through thick and thick, you know, trying to get to the best spots that you can up to this private property, you know.
All right. So for the listener, let's say we got a listener listening who's fixing a hunt Maryland early season.
Stay the hell out of my spots.
Watch out for those evil muscles.
Yeah. I will put an arrow through your foot.
No, what we're looking for is habitat diversity on private edges. And that's why we're looking at these private edges, because of habitat diversity. So I guess my main question was...
It's habitat diversity, but also the deer feel safe there. You're looking for private edges for people. These are rich people. Okay? I'm not saying that there's not rich people listening to this podcast, but I'm saying these people do not hunt.
Yeah.
Okay, if anything, they're feeding deer.
Even better.
They are feeding deer on private property, right? And these deer are going in Maryland. You can feed, okay? Whether you're a hunter or not, you know, and you live in some of these rich neighborhoods or these ag fields, these people are horse farmers and they're horse lovers and they feed the deer. They see natural life and they're just like, oh, that's gorgeous. Let me put a bag of corn out there for the deer, you know? And you're sitting on the property line 20 yards inside of the woods waiting for big old Betsy to come walking out there to grab some corn from the rich farmer.
Well, that sounds like a strategy in itself. So next time you drop your hat low, carry a 50-pound sack of corn with you. Yeah. And even if they say no,
so, I'm here to feed the deer.
And you just wait on the other side of the property line.
So
that's why it is somewhat...
My question is this. Look. So in Virginia, early season for us is October, right?
Right.
We're looking for acorn trees because that's the main feed that time of year. Obviously,
understand.
Everybody knows, if you're a well-versed deer hunter, you know that in early season, you hunt bed to feed and feed to bed, right? Like those are the two things that you hunt. If you hunt mornings, evenings, doesn't matter. Hunt bed to feed or feed to bed. The primary food source that year is going to be A, ag fields, and B, acorns. And a lot of times it's going to be acorns. In September, we're not hunting acorns, right? So outside of private edges, habitat diversity, and deer trails. Mm-hmm. I was going to say deer trails because obviously we're hunting deer trails. Everybody's going to hunt deer trails. Outside of just like an obvious deer trail. Because you can set up anywhere on a deer trail. Sometimes a deer trail is 400 yards long where it's obvious. You know? Mm-hmm. But outside of habitat diversity, private edges, and deer trails, what is the primary thing where you say, like when you're walking through a spot and you see deer sign, you say, I'm going to hang right here and this is where I'm going to hunt. Like, what is the telltale sign? What is the main driving factor for deer movement in the early season?
It's the simplest sign. Simplest sign, man. Like, if you see fresh sign, how do you not set up one? And if I'm feeling...
Define fresh sign. What are we looking for?
Like, fresh hoof prints, fresh droppings that are, like, happened that morning. Okay. While you're walking through there, and you see it, it's like, okay, these deer are active. Not only is this a freaking highway walking through here, right? Like... There's fresh droppings, there's fresh hoof prints in the mud, and it's like, why would you not set up on it? Also, in Maryland, along these reservoirs that I speak of, there's a lot of swamp oaks. If they're dropping mid-September, late September, early October, if they're dropping, that's where you need to be. Because not only is it hot first week of September, it's going to be even hotter whenever those swamp oaks are dropping.
Those are white chestnut oaks for you well-versed arborists.
Okay. Mr. Species. Okay, so I'm calling swamp oaks in Maryland, right? They're you know, deer love them, especially if they can get a good fresh food source, stay there, stage, eat acorns before they come walking out of the private into the public, vice versa. Yeah. I mean, and they can come either way. If the private's holding good little patch of woods or some good ag or somewhere where they can bed and be safe, and come walking into the public, boom. You're in the money, man. Yeah. I feel like I have the best of both worlds when I'm sitting. Within 50 to 100 yards
mm-hmm.
of private.
Gotcha.
And I might be that guy. People might be listening like, oh, that's such a shitty thing to do. But no, if you're a private land hunter or public land hunter, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Every public land hunter does.
And I think the habitat diversity plays a huge role in it. Like, even you know, Kale, on private land, hunting a hunt club, oftentimes, where's your best hunts?
On the property lines.
It's on a property line. It doesn't matter if it's private to private or private to public. It doesn't matter. When I came to your club last year, and I hunted what? Private public line.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And it was because it transitioned from swamp to hardwoods.
Yep.
At property lines, 95% of the time, there's a transition.
Yeah.
Because the habitat is managed differently between different owners. Whether the government owns it or the private owner owns it or two separate private owners, it doesn't matter. At that property line, the habitat is managed differently between the two owners, right?
Yep.
So there's always going to be some form of change. Like where I hunted last year, it was a habitat transition from a hard swamp edge into a drain that led up into a hardwood oasis. And there was red oaks dropping right on the edge of the swamp. And the swamp was thick cover. It had just come out of the water, so you had bedding cover there. And the deer could come out of that thick cover and come into that hardwood edge. So it just makes sense. Anytime you're on a property line, 95% of the time, there's going to be a habitat change of some form. And if you've deer hunted for any amount of time, you know that a habitat change creates an edge, and deers are creatures of edge, mm-hmm. and they're going to walk that habitat transition.
Well, not only that, too, you're talking about like the public versus private. Like even coming from, we'll talk about like from a hunt club standpoint, or even in New York. Like I've been like e-scouting New York for a long time now.
I know you have.
And everything that I have found, you gravitate, and this is private property now. Like, mm-hmm. we don't have to compete for anything.
A private property that's extremely under pressure.
Yeah, and I'm still, ironically, some of the best spots that I'm not saying they're going to produce, on property lines. They're on the property line. I'm looking at the neighbors, not because of, oh, they've got the field, or right. they've got this. I think it's the diversity and the habitat change, and that's why.
It's diversity and the habitat change is also, it's just like throwing your favorite bait when you're fishing. The confidence level that you have in that spot. If you have a good confidence level in that spot, your hunts are going to be better. You can sit there and be like, no. You can be sitting there for 5 hours, not see anything, but you just know in your head, like, no, they're going to come.
Dude, we talked about this so much this week. I'm going to make this a little mixed topic here between fishing and hunting, right?
Nope.
So, like, if you have a bait when you're bass fishing, let's say, right?
Yep.
You have a bait you're confident in. You caught a bunch of fish on it. Let's say you caught a bunch of fish on a chatterbait.
Yep,
right.
Yep. That's a good example.
So you're confident in a chatterbait.
Yeah.
Because you know you've caught a pile of fish on it. He's not.
I fucking hate a chatterbait.
I'm so confident on a chatterbait. I've caught so many fish on a chatterbait.
Yes.
So I'm extremely confident in a chatterbait. I will throw that chatterbait, dude. If I'm in a thick, nice piece of habitat, I will throw that chatterbait like it owes me money.
Not get bit for three, four hours straight. But you know that you're confident in it.
Yeah, so I will beat the bank like it owes me money, dude, because with that chatterbait. Because I know chatterbaits catch fish. And I feel like it's the same way with deer hunting, where if you hunt a piece of habitat that you're confident in, like for us, me and you, Kale, specifically, it's going to be a clear cut meets tall pines or a clear cut meets hardwoods.
Or a swamp edge. That is just as good as any type of private line.
Yeah, it is.
It really is.
That's what we look for in everything.
Yeah,
dude.
Like that cutover.
Where that cutover meets that freaking edge of that tall pines, like mature pines meets immature pines, we're going to be confident. It doesn't matter if there's deer sign there or not. Like, we're going to hunt it. Because we know.
It's got to be deer sign.
Yeah. We're right, of course. But you get my point. Like,
yeah.
We're going to be confident in that edge.
Right.
Especially if it's the rough.
If you're on any type of edge like that, any type of thick cover to a private land stream, you know, just like any type of change in habitat, right?
Yep.
You're going to, and you have sign,
yep.
Your confidence is there. And if your confidence is there, you are willing to stick it out for the long run.
And that's what makes a difference from willing to sit for an hour and a half versus 5 hours.
Yeah. You can sit there all night and be like, not see a deer, but like, I know there's deer there.
And I can come back tomorrow.
And I will come back there and I will sit there because I know that deer are using it because I saw the sign and it's right there where I like to be, and I'm comfortable. It's my comfort zone.
Yep. Look at this extremely tall spike I just got on camera.
Dude, you need to shoot that thing before it kills all your deer. For the listeners, okay, if there's a spike that's over, like, and it's shooting like a unicorn out the top of its freaking head.
Yeah, look at this thing, dude. This thing's
is
like
this New York or Virginia?
No, it's Virginia. It's in Mexico. You know where it's at.
It's like it's in Virginia. It's in Mexico. Okay. You know.
It's like 8 inches tall, dude.
Yeah, if that thing is coming at you know, look, dude, I had a deer the other year. It had a unicorn horn growing out.
Zoomed in on it.
And it was, if it started fighting with the bucks that I don't trail camera, that I was, you know.
How weird is that spike?
It's only on one side, too.
Yeah. How weird
is
that?
It's like a stabilizer going on.
That thing is going to freaking spear the top of one of your target bucks and kill it. Come red.
You know what it's going to be? You're going to see you're only going to see the ears and think it's a doe during bow season.
Smoke that.
And you smoke it and you get up and like, oh, dang it.
It's got like 12-inch spikes coming straight out the top of its freaking
They're growing
head.
With every comment. It does have some tall spikes.
Like tall spikes just growing straight up top of his head. You know it's going to freaking...
Growing straight up to
his
head. No
crap out of a freaking...
It already sounds like you got your alibi for when you go ahead and smoke that thing. Yeah.
Kill it.
You did it for the herd.
Yeah. Well, yeah, man, that's about what we've had going on here. We're
Maryland, too. So then we're in Carolina. We're literally the weekend after y'all open on the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
So it's within, I think, the 35-ish, mid-30s days.
So tell me what your tactics
are
going to be on the opening weekend of North Carolina. Speaking of which.
Corn.
Corn.
Yes, in Carolina, we can bait.
Okay.
And during September, there's a lot of people that, you know, have nice deer on camera during that time, and they have their own strategies for it. But during the whole month of September is pretty much my time where if I can – I will try to tag out on does. And there's no easier way to do that than, you know, setting your corn pile. Well, I hate to call it like a corn pile. There's a little bit of strategy to it. We still hunt the wind. We still try to hunt the transition.
Okay, we can sit here and talk about corn piles all night.
Yeah, I'm not ashamed,
while Kevin's gone.
Yeah. Okay. The Virginia, the illegal state.
So in Maryland, we can bait.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's no shame in this game.
There is absolutely no shame in this game. If you do not have a corn pile, you are out of the game.
Yeah.
Yes. That's the problem. If you do not have a corn pile and you are surrounded by other people who hunt, you do have corn piles,
yep.
And you don't have any ag or any type of good other than browse, right?
Yep.
If you don't have anything, you are out of the game.
Yes, this is
true.
Those
deer are going to be over there. They're not going to come to you. I have trail cameras, right? Like trail camera data of this. Okay, so my corn pile, I put 100 pounds out before I came here to Virginia.
Yep.
I was getting blown up, 1,000 photos every 2 days of bucks, target bucks on camera. Does every hour of the freaking day I had deer on camera.
Yep.
Gone. The corn is gone. The deer are gone. There's absolutely not a single deer.
Yep.
Okay. You know where they're at?
In the neighbors.
They're at the neighbors. Corn pile. Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Yep.
So if you do not have a corn pile, you're out. Now that does not mean that in the middle of the day, 2:30 in the afternoon, when I decide, hey, I've got off work, I'm going to go sit in my tree stand, I'm going to kill a deer. That does not mean they're just going to walk straight up to your
corn. It's still a last hour of daylight kind of thing.
So you got to understand where they're bedding.
Yep.
And you got to figure out how the deer are getting there from their bedding to the corn pile, because they're going to get there at dark.
Yep.
Especially if they're pressured after that first week.
Yep.
Right? You got to figure out where they're at, where they're bedding, and then you got to set up on them with the wind in your favor, because it's obviously that's never easy.
Yep.
Right?
Swirling winds.
Yeah. Swirling winds, it's going to be hard. So they're going to. You get set up on them and beat them before dark while they're heading to that corn pile.
Yep.
If they're gonna go into it, if they're comfortable at that point, because at this point it's a week into the season, they might have already been shot at or whatnot.
They're aware.
Yeah.
They hear the trucks going down, popping gravel.
100%.
They know the game, but there is strategy to it. Don't get me wrong. Like I don't just dump 100 pounds into like a pile. I scatter it like I'm feeding chickens. You know, that way they're, browsing on it and they're moving around, giving you better shot opportunities. My camping buddy Garrison told me about a strategy. He heard from actually like T-Bone Turner about putting a log, whatever kind of thick stick you can,
down. So you get a good shot angle.
Exactly.
They'll come in broadside.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You position it with your corn so that they literally give you a broadside shot. And this is, my buddy shot some nice bucks over corn doing it that way. But a lot of the spots that I get, like if I ever have a good shot opportunity on a buck, it's not the same spots that I'm bow hunting, because where we're at, it's a lot of pines and it's a lot of clear cuts. So September, I'm hunting a lot of different areas for the does that I'm not trying to target during the rut, because I want those does to be alive as long as possible during the rut, so that the boys, know where their girls are at that time of year. So I'll hunt different spots in September, strictly just to pick off, a random doe here or there where I do not plan on shooting a nice buck. So that's honestly the strategy for September, to try to tag out on does.
And that starts, I'm sorry, you probably already said this, but I missed it. When's the opening day of North Carolina?
So in Carolina, we're actually, I can't call it a week late. It's just the way that the dates fall. Ours is September 13th this year, but I've seen it early as September 7th and 8th.
Okay.
It's always like the second Saturday in September.
Right.
But that's 3 weeks, and then our muzzleloader season opens the first Saturday in October, so October 4th, and then we're full gun hunting middle of October.
So you have some good trail camera footage of these deer on corn at right now?
Not now. They go out next weekend.
Okay.
Because I'm only trying to target those, and I'm hunting history, I'm not hunting new areas.
Uh-huh.
I'm a little lazy on the trail cam game. I'd wait till late August because, I'm just shooting those. I'm not trying to get inventory on nice bucks. If one shows up, welcome to the show, and that'll be a totally different strategy.
You done messed up,
get comfortable.
Yeah. Well, from my experience, I've started putting corn out, and it's like I'll have deer on there within a couple of days.
Do you do any, like, in the early season, when I say early season, midsummer or late spring, do you mix any minerals in with your corn?
I really should, and I think about it all the time.
Yeah.
And people are probably listening, like, what an idiot. But I probably should. I just, no. I know that the area that I hunt, the public, the private that I hunt, holds good deer.
Yeah.
And I know that usually within that first week of September, that first week of September is a magical time to be in the woods, man. I don't care what anyone says. I've I've always said it. I, other than mid-October, late October, personally for me, that first week of September is my absolute favorite.
Unpressured deer.
Unpressured deer, bachelor groups, they're in velvet. Like, oh my gosh, just gets me hard thinking about it. Man, I just love every freaking second of it.
It's like the last hour we're not being tied.
Oh my God. Yeah, I wouldn't know. No, I'm kidding. I was just kidding.
No, but you're right. You're right. We see that in Carolina as well. It's the same thing. But another reason, I feel the same way. I don't ever do the mineral blocks or anything like that. I know it would help the deer herd, but the way I look at it too, the deer, the bucks that I'm trying to shoot in late October, mid-November, you know, they're not in the same areas in the spring and summer. You know, I'm hunting bucks that are on someone else's property that, you know, migrate over to our does kind of thing. So mm-hmm. I'm essentially, if I'm putting minerals out, I'm feeding somebody else's buck that's going to leave and go, you know, travel across the neighbor's property line and shoot. So that's the only reason I don't do the minerals, at least on our hunt club property. Mm-hmm. If we had private land where we could set up a sanctuary for them, then yeah, absolutely.
How was your bathroom break?
It was wonderful.
Hey, welcome back.
I feel relieved.
I thought you were checking the smoker.
I did that too.
That's what we'll call it.
We got two racks of ribs on the smoker. It's kind of
weird. We are going to party tonight. Okay, yeah. My buddy here, Kevin, introduced me to the whiskey sour. Kevin, you want to explain what the whiskey sour is for the listeners who do not know? I know a lot of Pennsylvanians do not know.
First of all, if you don't know what the whiskey sour is, you're basically a loser. Second of all, pick your favorite whiskey, put two shots over rocks, okay? Two shots.
Those are ice for our listeners.
Those are for, that's ice. That's ice.
They know.
Two shots, bourbon or Jack. Or whiskey, whatever whiskey you're into.
Bourbon, Jack, or whiskey.
We're doing Wild Turkey 101. And then one shot of lemon juice. Did I say lemon juice? Yeah, I said
one shot of lemon juice.
Yeah.
So half amount of what you put in.
Yeah, whatever amount of whiskey you put
Kevin
in.
Kevin will post the recipe half on the Pinterest board.
It'll be on the Pinterest board, yeah.
So two shots of whiskey, one shot of lemon juice.
And a little bit of agave syrup. And if you're a real dog,
which I'm not, apparently.
You put some egg whites in it. You froth it. You froth the egg whites and put that on top.
Real dog.
And you got to do the Starbucks stir, you know, where you do
I can't
it.
Say I mean, that would make you more of a man, but we're using froth.
I'll tell you what. I'm from Pennsylvania. I'm sure there's a thing up there. I guarantee it. But this is the most delicious thing I've ever been introduced to. So I've been drinking them all week. It's been great.
What's he saying?
It was worth the trip from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it was worth the trip from Pennsylvania. Not only for the Chickahominy.
Yeah. Like,
fuck the chicken hobby.
But we'll do whiskey sours in April.
We did go jogging today on the Northwest River.
We didn't catch any fish.
We didn't catch a single fish. I caught my first Virginia snot rocket. We call them snot rockets, but it was just
your pickerel?
A pickerel.
Yep.
Okay, so you know what I'm talking about.
We call them Jakes or something.
About throwing on the spider.
Oh, yeah. Did you do that?
No.
Oh, gosh. All right, we got to go.
Well, on a real note, we're over an hour here, so we got to wrap this thing up. Mike, you want to wrap it up?
No, I don't.
Come on, wrap it up.
Well, I appreciate y'all for listening. And this is the 50th anniversary. Holy shit.
Golly.
Too many sours, dude.
Yeah.
This is the 50th show of the Mid-Atlantic Outdoors podcast. I'm super grateful to be a part of this show with my buddy Kevin. And Kale, thanks for coming on board. And we'll see you next week.
See y'all next week.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel, because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.